Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the A24 Project here on the Nerd Party Network. Every 2 weeks we look at two films from the A24 filmography, and in between hopefully we try and bring you interviews with talent involved in bringing their films to the screen. In this episode we move into 2018 with the vanishing of Sydney Hall and the last movie star, and joining me as always on this adventure is Dallas King. How are you?
I'm very well this week, how are you?
Yeah, good. Yeah, it's one of those ones I think we said in the last episode, we were kind of getting into a little spell of films where we hadn't seen them or were quite unfamiliar with them, and some of these were the last films we really needed to tick off in our A24 filmography watch.
Yeah, no, I think we sort of said that, you know, the likes of Moonlight, Hereditary and First Reformed, whatever, I think that's when I really started to know of A24 as a brand. But I think because A24 are technically only a US sort of distributor and exhibitor, and it's up to UK distribution companies to take on the rights and stuff like that, sometimes some things can sort of fall by the wayside. And I think that we were coming up to a little patch where the UK maybe wasn't as switched on, or maybe knew something that we didn't about some of the films we were about to watch before we sort of hit that another sort of golden patch in a few episodes time as well. But it was an interesting sort of double bill to sort of dive into for the first time, I think.
Yeah, so before we dive into those films, there's not much to really kind of report on for A24 Hour News, but we can bring you a small preview of next week's bumper pre-Christmas interview special with three of the cast members of The Death of Dick Long, an A24 film that's gone a bit under the radar this year. So we'll have Virginia Newcomb, Andre Hyland, and Michael Abbott Jr. And here's this little segment from my chat with Virginia Newcomb. When did you sort of first hear about the death of, like, Dick Long and the role of Lydia?
So I, kind of in this festival family that I'm speaking of, filmmaker who lived in Birmingham, Melody Sisk, she's in Atlanta now, had seen some of my work, and we had gotten to know each other, and she's one of the producers on Dick Long, and she had recommended me to Daniel. Daniel and I had not met, we didn't know each other, and it's interesting because I had heard of Swiss Army Man, and then I went down a Daniel Scheiner rabbit hole of like watching his music videos and then realizing he was from the same area that I was from, and kind of had that moment of feeling like, I'm gonna work with this guy, like I really get this weird, lovely, empathic Southern person. And then it was a few months later that Melody reached out and said, hey, there's this A24 film coming to town and I want you to read for it. And I think the director's really excited. And then Daniel had me read for just about every part. I don't think they were expecting to find the lead here, but eventually I ended up getting Lydia. And so, Daniel and I really hit it off. Like, he's just so easygoing and he makes the audition process like so relaxed and fun. And I'm lucky to have a production company like A24, you know, take chances on people like me. And I mean, they were so behind Daniel casting a lot of the roles locally and keeping it as Southern as possible to keep the story as honest as possible. So yeah, I think a few fingers pointed Daniel towards me, and then I don't know, it's kind of kismet. I'm he and I are going to work together a lot. I really love working with Daniel.
What's he like as a director to work with? And obviously you touched on Swiss Army Man. When you kind of, you saw the script, you thought, okay, what were your expectations going in? Did you expect sort of a Swiss Army Man too? Or was this sort of a Southern kind of mystery on the agenda?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it really helps to have someone like Daniel, whose work I had seen, and have that context, because you know that he was going to approach a story like this with heart. Melody kind of primed me for it being a pretty out there dark script, and then I read it, and you know, Billy's, and I think this really comes across in the final product, but Billy's writing is really sensitive, and Daniel's directing is really sensitive, and it's, there's not a lot of, interestingly enough, the script has a lot of secrecy, and a lot of the, themes we explore, you know, shame and what we don't say, but the set itself was very open, and it feels like you could, your opinion was valued, and you could talk to people, and you know, the collaboration was real. And often on set, it doesn't always feel like that. It's like stay in your lane kind of stuff, and that's part of the thing that kind of made me want to find a new frontier of filmmaking that was different from Hollywood. And I feel like a lot of filmmakers like Daniel and some other filmmakers that I've worked with recently want that too. And so it's nice to be able to find each other and get to experiment with that. Cause Dan's just fun. I mean, he takes humor very seriously, which I think is a good approach. And we all knew we had to play this as honestly and sensitively as possible. But also, like, when we would have heavy days, he'd take a break in the middle and we'd have a crazy VIP dance party. Or all of the cast and crew went, you know, tubing down the lake, and we had some real fun, just Southern experiences together. And, you know, that's what you hope a film can be. I really believe the process of filmmaking, how that process goes, really impacts the product and how you treat people. And having a healthy experience is part of what you want to take away, and hopefully part of what is communicated in the film too.
So Dallas, you've not seen The Death of Dick Long yet, have you?
I have not yet. No, I've sort of reached the point where, due to the A24 project, I'll basically watch films which don't have like a UK release. I will just watch them as and when we come to them in the project. So I will be keeping my ears out for any potential spoilers or whatever, but I'll hopefully try and catch them. I mean, I just caught the Katie Chang one today when it was released. Well, last week when it was released, because technically this is out next week. Oh, it's all very confusing. But yeah, no, I did catch that one. It was great to sort of revisit that in your chat with her about going back into the, almost like you said, the very beginning of A24. I mean, these interviews are always great, and it's just amazing that you always... I mean, it's you're just a very brazen, bold, sliding into a DMer kind of guy, aren't you?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I think with The Death of Dick Long, ultimately, a lot of people haven't seen this A24 film yet. I think a lot of people are going to find it and discover it. And the film has one of the biggest spoilers that you can imagine for an A24 film. And we are very conscious not to spoil that film, because people might hear those interviews and want to check out the film or go into this film blind as possible. So it is a complete spoiler-free chat. We really dance around the big spoiler of the film. So one to look out for. But we've also got another interview we can announce. So coming in the next few months, we'll have an interview with Claudia Chinea, who plays Danny's sister Terry in Midsommar, about her performance and role behind the scenes working on the film. So that's one to keep an eye out for in 2020. So we do discuss what it was like working on that film and having a bear on set. So definitely one to keep an eye out for.
Ah, that bear in a cage. You know it's going to come back. It's a bear.
In a cage. So as Dallas kind of touched on earlier on, we are kind of diving into sort of this, you know, an interesting double feature. And we're going to kickstart that with The Vanishing of Sydney Hall. And set over the course of 12 years and three stages of life, Sydney Hall falls in love, writes the book of a generation, and then disappears without a trace. So starring Logan Lerman in the titular role, Kyle Chandler, and A24 alumni Elle Fanning, this film was written and directed by Sean Christensen. So Dallas, when was the first time you saw this film? What was your expectation going in, and what was your reaction?
The first time I saw this film was about 3 days ago, when I did a double bill watching over the weekend via US Apple iTunes, because we're reaching that point where it's quite difficult to get these in the UK. I don't know if this one ever... It certainly didn't seem to have a physical media release over here. I'm not sure if it ever got a cinema release, but I didn't really know much about the film. I sort of... When it gets to this sort of point where, you know, it's difficult to, I just sort of go in as cold as possible and like to be surprised. And yeah, I know I was surprised by this one, because, you know, it had seemed to have taken a slight critical drubbing, certainly as far as Rotten Tomatoes goes. But, you know, I actually thought there was some interesting sort of points in here and very good things that I'm looking forward to chatting about. What about yourself? When did you first discover that Sydney Hall had vanished?
Yeah, this was one that was on my sort of watch list for quite a while as a something to address. So I got it for like 99 cents a couple months ago on iTunes USA, and I didn't really know what to expect going in. I think I'd seen the trailer a good few months before it, sort of like I was kind of just watching some of the trailers for some of the films I'd yet to see. I think I was a bit bored on a lunch break one time, and I was quite interested to see it because I'd recently seen an indie film in sort of the summer, its name escapes me, with Logan Lerman, who I thought was really fantastic in that film, but I wasn't really familiar with any of his other films. So this was when I was kind of curious to see him in something else. I think he was in Percy Jackson or something like that as well.
He was the lead in the Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief and that, and yeah, because I was sort of watching this film and actually wondering if it was actually supposed to be called The Vanishing of Logan Lerman, because, you know, here's someone who had, you know, made a bit of a splash. You know, he got the lead in a franchise. You then got Percy Jackson, and I think it was Gods and Monsters or something like that. And then I think rather infamously, he sent in a video audition for, I think it was possibly about The Amazing Spider-Man, but he was considered too young compared to the likes of Andrew Garfield, even though he was a teenager. And since, you know, MCU have gone down the route of actually having a teenager in Tom Holland in the role and stuff like that. But, you know, I thought he was great in, I think it was Perks of Being a Wallflower. I thought he was very good in that. And it's actually some similarities between that film and this one about him sort of being a writer and stuff like that. And, you know, he seems like someone who should have had a bigger career or should be in more things, but for some reason or another it just hasn't really worked out, or the films that he has been in haven't really maybe got over to the UK yet and stuff like that. So I thought he's someone with sort of genuine talent who I think we should be seeing more of. I think
the film that I was thinking about was End of Sentence. So it's one of these films that seemed to blow everyone away at the Edinburgh Film Festival, and I hope it gets sort of a, you know, a release in some form or another across the pond and here as well. So he sort of plays this like he's just out of jail, and him and his father go on a sort of a trip around Ireland to sort of scatter their mother's ashes. Not the most original concept in the world, but I think he puts in such an impressive performance there, up against John Hawkes. So one film to definitely watch out for. So what did you make of this film, Dallas? You know, is this one that you were sitting there thinking, how have I sat on this one for so long? Or was it one where, okay, now I can understand why I've maybe seen all these other A24 films before it?
I'm kind of in the middle, I think, because I did like it, but I didn't love it. And I can understand why it's maybe not received the level of recognition or attention as other sort of big hitter A24 films. It doesn't make that immediate sort of impact, but there was something that I did kind of like about it. I mean, I think I'm a bit of a sucker. I do enjoy like a good sort of films about writers and sort of that kind of thing. And the sort of mystery aspect of what happened to this kid, and it's a bit of a sort of a puzzle piece. You've got sort of three sort of time strands all sort of weaving in together. I think maybe one of the issues I had with it was apparently it's sort of set at three stages of life, sort of around about sort of 18 year old, 24 years old, and then 31 years old. And, you know, Logan Lerman's playing all three, and now he's quite young. And in the third section where he's 31 years old, he's sort of re-emerging from sort of this disappearance, and he's sort of like this traveling hobo character, so he's got sunglasses on and a beard or whatever, so it's very easy to tell which time frame that's in. But when it's between sort of the 18 and 24 year old, there's only a very slight change in a haircut, so sometimes it's quite difficult to piece together when things are happening. And I think that's maybe part of the issue I had with it, but I thought it was a quite interesting little performance, and I was drawn in as to what happened to this kid that led him to sort of leave everything behind. So in terms of a sort of plot and whatever, it did manage to draw me in, but I think its execution was maybe slightly muddled, that it didn't wow me as much as I thought, and maybe wasted a couple of characters in particular, sort of later on. One character in particular, I think later on was wasted, but we'll get into that. What about yourself?
Ultimately, I think I struggled a bit with this film because I just couldn't buy into it at all. I never believed in this sort of character of Sidney Hall as some sort of genius writer. And I think there seems to be a sort of genre of movies where it seems to be sort of about writers who create this piece of genius, an incredible, you know, piece of work. But we always have to be told by other people what a genius this person is, even though we never maybe get that from the character. And it seems to be also that there's this genre where it's like we see the story of this genius writer and then that life becoming part of like a story getting it adapted into a book, and you know, and it's meant to be this gripping book that people love, and you're like, but I'm not necessarily enjoying the film about it, so why would people necessarily go out and enjoy the story of this life? You know, say like Little Women, for example, that's on the horizon, enjoyable book. And then you can think, you know, okay, the book's about this person, you know, their adventure. Yeah, I can understand why that would be turned into a book and people would be gripped by it. It seems genuinely interesting. Great characters. I don't get that with the kind of the story and life of kind of Sidney Hall. I never once bought that he was a genius, and I just couldn't really overcome that.
Yeah, I think maybe it's possibly because maybe we just don't... I don't think we spend enough time with him in the middle section of his life where he has the success, and we see him, you know, where we see him write a short story at the beginning and read it out to class that gets him into trouble, and then he starts writing the book, but we never see that creative process of him actually writing the book. And maybe we needed more sort of passages from the book or more time spent on the creating of it. It's like, it seems to be that he wrote a chapter, his teacher loved it, sent it to a publisher, the publisher then was wild by it, bought it, and then, you know, suddenly he's then, you know, this New York Times best-selling author. You know, this sort of disappearance sort of just leads into the fact then that he becomes this sort of legend or whatever. But I think it was maybe, I think the middle section is where the most interesting stuff potentially happened, and I think that maybe got glossed over in terms for sort of setting up the romantic element with Elle Fanning's character Melody, and then the sort of Kyle Chandler's mysterious no-named investigative person trying to find him after all these years. I think it was the middle section that needed more fleshing out in order for us to, like you say, to buy into this fact. You know, everyone tells us he's a genius, but we maybe don't see that enough in the story for it to justify it.
I suppose we'll probably verge into a little bit of kind of spoiler territory here, because I suppose how do you talk about a film like this, especially when it's in sort of these three parts and they kind of do intermingle? Did you find this kind of mystery behind the vanishing of Sidney Hall gripping, and what was it about sort of the road to there that didn't really sort of work for you?
I think what it is there was potentially too many sort of plot strands that seemed to get tied up very, very quickly right at the end. Essentially, the sort of two mysteries, I think it's a sort of hinted at early on that his book Suburban Tragedy is based on the suicide of someone at his school, but you never sort of fully get into that until sort of towards the end. There's hints as to what happened, and you think you know what happened, but it's never truly resolved until the end. And then there's the reason of why he gave up his fame and everything and disappeared. And I think that not enough time was spent particularly on that one. There's a really sort of, you know, you've got this romantic relationship with Elle Fanning's character, who's in it, at, you know, this the girl across the street who is a fan of his writing, and then they get together, but then she sort of disappears for large chunks of the movie, and it's hinted at that he's actually having a relationship with someone else. And I think the problem was that I didn't realize that they're meant to be a couple still at this point in the story. I think it was kind of glossed over, and so therefore more weight needed to be added to that central relationship in order for what comes later on to sort of fully have the impact that it needed. And I think that's what maybe missed out. I think because it keeps cutting between the three strands all the time, there's never enough weight or time spent on any one particular moment to then justify the sort of emotional weight and impact that's required at the end. I think it doesn't stick the landing, I think, is what my issue was. You know, despite, you know, performance, you know, Elle Fanning is always fantastic, but I don't think she's got enough screen time to make, you know, the impact that she's needed. You know, there was, you've got other sort of actors, you've got like Nathan Lane in there, you've got Michelle Monaghan as the mother. That part I think wasn't fleshed out enough either. I would have liked to see more from the sort of teacher character, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II. He sort of stole the show in Aquaman for me as Black Manta, and he's apparently doing great work in the Watchmen TV series at the moment, which everyone keeps raving about, but I haven't been able to start watching yet, but I've heard fantastic things, so I'm going to definitely catch that at some point. But yeah, I think it was just, because I mean, the movie itself is around about sort of, it's quite short, and but then it's, you don't get enough time on any one particular story for it to fully gel together and come together in as satisfying a way as I think as you want. Did you find that? Or
yeah, I just think like what needed to happen was probably like greater periods of time between the time frames. I think it just felt too condensed, even though it's meant to be sort of over this maybe about 12 years or something like that. I think it almost felt like watching young people playing grown up, like you're looking at them even just sort of physically, you went, I don't buy that they have like a kid on the way, or they're married, or that he has become this successful writer in this period of time. It just felt like people were just sort of putting on a bit of wigs, maybe a little bit of makeup. I think if there had been a stretch of period, like if time had been better represented, I think this could have made for an interesting piece. But it just, as I keep coming back to it, I just didn't buy into it all at all. I just didn't think it was ultimately very interesting. But what I do find somewhat interesting is imagining a sort of alternative universe for this, where Joe Russo was actually linked to directing this originally. Ridley and Tony Scott were to be executive producers, and Jim Sturgess was to play the titular role. Did you know about that at any point, Dallas?
No, I didn't actually. That is quite interesting, because I mean, I'd be interested to know, so if this script existed in its current form back then or not, because I think what you're talking about and the issues I have maybe come from the structure of the film, because, you know, you could have played this out linearly, but I understand why sort of writer director Sean Christensen has gone for the style. It adds more of an element of mystery and a sort of puzzle thing, but also I think the structure of what it has from going between the three different time periods, I think that would work in a novel, because, you know, you would have clear chapter breaks, whatever, and you could then easily see at which point in the story you're going back and forth from. I think because there's not enough of a visual differential between the three time periods, it's quite difficult to know exactly where you are in the story, whereas it would work in written form much better. But it'd be interesting to know if that's his creative decision, or whether or not that was something that maybe always existed in the script before it got to him, or maybe what the reasons were behind the sort of Joe Russo and that leaving the project and this guy taking it on.
Yeah, well, sort of Sean Christensen was obviously one of the co-writers and that, and they came up with this story. He was in a band called Stellar Star, and they were sort of touring alongside the Killers at the time. So they wrote this spec script for a film called Sydney Hall, and what it was, that instead of being an author at the time, it was going to be about a musician, and they decided to sort of go with the book angle because they felt it would be a bit more believable to have this story about an author and maybe achieving fame in that period of time than perhaps a musician. So yeah, it seems to have had an interesting sort of development process over the past few years, and I think ultimately there could have been a more interesting version of this film out there.
I mean, I can definitely see that it working with a rock star as well. You know, you could see someone sort of, I mean, certainly these days getting a huge following very quickly on social media, releasing a couple of albums and then just disappearing like that. And because I think, actually, I'm now thinking about it, I'm basically almost describing the plot of Velvet Goldmine. Is that it? That's basically where Christian Bale's reporter basically tries to track down an elusive former rock star who disappeared, isn't it? That it's kind of that similar sort of plot to it. So yeah, I mean, yeah, clearly then, obviously because it's been done before, it clearly would have worked with a sort of rock star element. So But yeah, no, that's been done before. So clearly that's maybe why they decided to go with the author book, because maybe they were writing it thinking they've got a really good idea, and then they turned on the TV one day, saw Velvet Goldmine and went, oh, hang on, maybe we should change that.
Absolutely. So have you got any final thoughts on The Vanishing of Sydney Hall?
I think it's maybe slightly unfair that it seems to have vanished from the annals of A24, and you know, it's not really one that anyone really talks about, but you know, it is there on iTunes if you want to. I mean, if you can rent it for 99 cents one week, then I think it's probably worth watching just to see. It's certainly not in my bottom sort of bottom 10 or 5 or so. I think I'd rate it slightly higher than that. I think it's an interesting one, an interesting sort of venture, but maybe one that just didn't work completely for me, and yeah, the end result wasn't what I hoped for when it started, but I think I'm slightly more positive on it than you were, so.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. So let's dive into another, what I assume will be a first time watch for both of us. And our second film today is another DirecTV and A24 joint, The Last Movie Star. So Burt Reynolds is Vic Edwards, an aging movie star who was invited to a small local film festival in Nashville. He attends and goes on a journey throughout his past as he faces the fact that his glory days are behind him. So Dallas, when did you first watch this one? What was your expectations going in, and what did you think on your first watch?
Again, this was one I watched this weekend for the very first time. I didn't know too much about it. I'm not sure if I'd had it confused with another film, like a British film that had a similar sort of thing about how an actor getting involved in a local theatre company. I thought it was maybe that, but it turns out it wasn't. It was this film. And, you know, I think watching the film now, it's taken on a bit of a, I certainly came to the film and watched the film with a slightly different head and heart than I would have if it had come out a couple of years ago before Burt Reynolds' passing. I think it's an interesting watch now, but I thought that it's one which I probably would have dismissed, you know, immediately as being a bit of just a bit of fluff, you know, this sort of fish out of water, you know, the old Hollywood star going to this sort of small town, well, not really small town, but Nashville. You know, it's not a small town, but it's got that kind of feel where if it had been set in the UK, it would have been this small film festival in the middle of nowhere. He probably would have got a boat over to the island or whatever and then realized he was in the wrong place, sort of thing. It's kind of that sort of story, but it allows him to sort of reminisce about his past and stuff like that. And I think ultimately I ended up being more charmed by it than I thought I was going to be. And a lot of that, I think, came down to Burt Reynolds' performance. What about yourself?
Yeah, I'm going to get the negatives out of the way and then focus sort of on the positives. I thought Ariel Winter was absolutely terrible in this film, to be honest. Every time sort of it went to her sort of acting on the phone, being upset about her boyfriend being a dick, I was like, no, this is just, she's really miscast. I know, like, I kind of know her sort of from the Modern Family thing where she's a bit of a dweebish character in that. And I was kind of like, okay, you know, her in sort of like stripper pants and sort of like crop tops and all the tattoos and stuff, I just didn't buy into it at all. I had as much kind of belief in that as sort of Sydney Hall as a genius writer. So I really, really struggled with her and some of the younger characters. But I'm the same as you. I honestly found myself a bit misty-eyed at the end, and that's all down to Burt Reynolds. I think the fact that they lean so heavily into his life story, you know, the marriages, the films that he's been in, his life story, it becomes quite a special film in a way to watch, where it's just like you're watching sort of a this is your life of Burt Reynolds. And obviously he's died not long after this film, so this is one of his final films, not the final film, but one of them. And I just thought it was such a lovely melancholy performance. You know, it was a very self-aware performance, a self-aware script, and I thought that kind of worked quite well. You know, a lot has been said about Burt Reynolds' career choices, personal life choices, you know, the opportunities that he's passed on, whether it was Han Solo, James Bond, roles in The Godfather. You know, he's had a career that, you know, he had his years, but a lot of it seems to have been what could have been. And I think the film, when it focused on that, did really, really well. And, you know, all his words of wisdom sort of had extra significance now, knowing that he has not long died after making this film. It reminded me of a somewhat superior film that I kind of caught last year, Lucky by John Carroll Lynch, where it was Harry Dean Stanton. You know, very different vibe, but again, it was like Harry Dean Stanton's last film, and he has this really philosophical character, an actor that has had his highs and then a sort of career that's just sort of meandered a little bit, and he kind of goes out on this incredible high. And you know, it's like this character Burt Reynolds says in the film, you know, people will forgive you for with a great third act. And I think we got that with Lucky, this less so, but I thought it was a lovely tribute to sort of Burt Reynolds and made me realise how little of his filmography I've seen.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's impossible now to almost separate the two between the character of Vic Edwards and the actor and character of Burt Reynolds. I mean, they do as much in the film by, at the beginning they've got footage of him on like talk shows and stuff, so that's fair enough. Obviously, you know, you can play that off as, oh, that's being Vic Edwards. But when they bring in sort of dream sequences where he's interacting with himself in Smokey the Bandit and then Deliverance, it's like, okay, so is it meant to have been Vic Edwards in these films? Or so that, I mean, and it's also the fact that they've managed to get the rights to incorporate this footage. It was a big surprise for me that they went down that route and were able to do that. So that was quite interesting. But I think, yeah, it's very difficult to separate the two, given, you know, because I think his last role was, you know, he was technically Tarantino wanted him to play the Bruce Dern role in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So knowing that, you know, he wasn't able to do that is a bit sad, because I think he would have nailed it, because, you know, he, you know, 20 years ago, 22 years ago, you know, he showed just how good he can be. I think he was sensational in Boogie Nights and would have been deserving of the Oscar that year. I thought he was just fantastic in that role. And again, it's one of those things where even then it's like he had that sort of blip where John Travolta had a similar thing where, you know, he could have done great things after that, but then never really seemed to capitalize on that second wave of success that he had. But you know, and the best scenes, I think, like you say, are, you know, he gets sort of emotional reminiscent when he's sort of going around his hometown and stuff that. But I think it's the scenes where he's being interviewed on stage and he becomes brutally honest about his life choices. I mean, it's like you say, it's impossible to separate about when he talks about the things he's passed on and regrets and stuff like that, and just about how Hollywood is these days and the things and how he squandered it. And you know, it's almost quite sad. You know, one of the quotes he says is, you know, he's come back to say, you know, it's one last goodbye. And I noticed that on IMDb, the film is called Dog Years, but it's, you know, been marketed now as the last movie star. And, you know, I think the director sort of said that, you know, Burt Reynolds for him is one of the last great movie stars. And I think it's actually quite a nice fitting tribute, you know, unexpected one, because they never planned it to be this way, but it turns out to be a nice fitting tribute to Burt Reynolds and his talent.
Yeah, most definitely. I think it can be a little heavy-handed at points, some of the, you know, but there's, you know, I think with like a film like this, like I think the audience for a film like this isn't perhaps going to be your typical A24 demographic, you know, young, hip, you know, 24 to 38 kind of, you know, crowd that, you know, that everyone seems to be always chasing. I can imagine a much older audience member kind of watching a film like this, putting it on, finding it on DirecTV, you know. You know, we have maybe something like The Lovers, which kind of leans in a bit to that older crowd. You know, this is maybe the grey pound sort of A24 film that doesn't come across too often. And I think an audience member, that older one that perhaps lived through the Burt Reynolds years, where he was the number one best-selling actor for sort of 6 years in a row, I can imagine them getting something from this film and perhaps having a regret or two of their own. I'd watched an interview going down a sort of YouTube rabbit hole after watching this, where Burt Reynolds said that this was something that had actually happened to him, where he got invited to sort of a, you know, tribute to his life, and it was held in a bar. And it was like he was talking about sort of those moments in his career where it was just like, you know, it's maybe just not panning out the way it had been here. And you know, it was really interesting to see a film like that where it had been drawn so much to life. And I think I'm not necessarily the crowd or audience for the film, but there certainly is an audience out there, and I think, you know, they just probably have to find it a bit harder than maybe we did.
I know, I think it's an interesting one that, because I'm not sure if it ever got released over here, but I'd be interested now to go back and sort of look at the sort of trailers and the marketing campaign for this film to see exactly who it was targeted at initially. Because like you say, I think there's definitely a sort of silver screener audience for this type of thing, and you could easily market it that way. But then, you know, you've got this whole sort of film festival where it's about all these young sort of 20-year-old sort of film nerds watching films in a bar and stuff like that. So you've almost got these two diametrically opposed audiences for the film. But of course, then that's where the sort of meat of the story is, about this culture clash between the two generations and age groups and stuff like that. So, I mean, watching this film, I have to say, it did inspire me to think, hey, why don't we put on an A24 film festival and invite all these people over, saying that we, you know, we gave awards to such and such and such and such, and then bring them over. And then, you know, it turns out they were just showing it in the bar of a cinema or something like that. You know, we could get Willem Dafoe over, you know, get him, you know, his big bushy beard, you know, get him to do Lighthouse stuff and like that, thinking he's getting an award, acceptance award, a Robert Pattinson Lifetime Achievement Award for A24 performances, that kind of thing. So yeah, does that sound good? Do you want to start our very own film festival and get some big names to come along and stay in a Travelodge or a Premiere Inn?
Yeah, sounds good to me. I know what I'll be asking for Christmas, some Premiere Inn vouchers that I can use when we get Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson over to watch it in like the Kino Bar at the Belmont Cinema.
We could do it in Edinburgh, because at least they've got Uber. You know, we can always get an Uber for them, because yeah, no, we don't have Uber up in Aberdeen yet, so therefore, you know, it'd have to be ridiculously priced taxis, I think.
Ah, put them on First Bus.
Oh yeah, actually, yeah, if we get someone over the age of 60, then they'll get free bus travel. Excellent, I like it. Cost saving, that's what we like. We can do it on a budget.
See? All worked out. So have you got any final thoughts on the last movie star?
I think that it's one which I didn't know much about, but I think I'm glad that I've seen it, and I think it's a must-see for any sort of Burt Reynolds fans. If they haven't seen this one yet, I think it's definitely one to watch, and I think, yeah, like you say, if you're a real fan, I think it's impossible not to get slightly misty-eyed by the end of it. I think it's taken on a new sort of life of its own following his death, and I think it's sad that it has become that way. You never want to see that, but I think it has taken on a new life, and it's one which I think it's one that I definitely recommend to people, even if it's not their particular cup of tea. I think as sort of film fans, I think there's, from the film festival aspect, it certainly shows you maybe how not to run a film festival. So it's a sort of how-to guide, or a not how-to guide there, but it's also a fantastic sort of tribute to one of the sort of truly great screen icons of the sort of 70s and 80s as well.
Absolutely. So we will be back next week with our cast interviews from The Death of Dick Long, and then we will be having a Christmas break where we can open up our A24 socks from underneath the Christmas tree.
Well, you say
and
that.
We'll return.
But I could do an unboxing now, because I just got a box of A24 goodies, didn't I? So look at this. I know this doesn't work on radio, does it? But oh, there's a hat and a mug, which hopefully hasn't smashed, being travelled all the way from overseas. So yeah, maybe I'll do a video on that and post it online for you all, because that's apparently a thing. Unboxing videos are apparently a huge thing. So yeah, we'll try and do that with an A24 one, shall we?
Explaining that you've bought a couple of items from the A24 shop is basically advertising. You're someone that's rich enough to rob, so be it on your own head.
I'm not rich enough to rob. I'm just quick off the mark in terms of being able to get online at the exact moment in time. I'm not rich enough to be able to get... I didn't get the bear. I never got the bear in the cage. Or the candles.
The candles will always evade us. But fingers crossed for Christmas. We'll be having a Christmas break after The Death of Dick Long. But we will be back on January 6th with Lean on Pete and Backstabbers for Beginners. So have you seen either of those
films?
Nope,
they'll be both first-time watchers again. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, I've seen Lean on Pete, but Backstabbers for Beginners, I watched the first 5 minutes this afternoon and never got around to getting on beyond that. So I'm curious to watch that one. So, you know, we'll join you as obviously next week, but obviously until then, have a Merry Christmas and we'll see you both together again in 2020.